Hello, this is Pamela Badilla, your neighbor from Data Data International Folkloric Theater, and you're listening to your radio station, WGXC, Acre, New York, hands-on community radio for Columbia and Greene County. Enjoy.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today on the WGXC Morning Show, we'll hear from Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson and City of Hudson Housing Director Michelle Tulo about a proposal for affordable housing in the City of Hudson. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather, the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after Jason Martin from Troy is finished singing this song. It's time for the WGXC local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Turn out or tune in to two of the world's greatest percussionists performing in Catskill at the Avalon Lounge on October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Composers and percussionists Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt perform with a live web stream at WGXC.org. Turn out or tune in for Tatsuya Nakatani and Bobby Previtt performing at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill on Sunday, October 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Henning's Local Test Kitchen in Round Top, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Jeanette Wolfberg reports in the Columbia paper that the Hudson City School District is participating in a study on how to improve teacher morale and retention with the support and guidance of the Novo Foundation. The results so far suggest that the district's teachers and paraprofessionals need to feel appreciated, according to Assistant Superintendent of School Improvement, April Prestipino. At the December 7, 2021 Board of Education meeting, science teacher and Hudson Teachers Association President Wayne Kinney portrayed his colleagues as feeling, quote, unsafe, unquote, and, quote, disrespected, unquote, on the job, subject to verbal insults and occasionally physical attacks. In the spring of 2022, outgoing school board member Charles Parmentier, whose wife was employed by the district for almost 30 years, said teachers spend extra time and their own money preparing for their students, but, quote, are not appreciated, unquote. Prestipino said the district is, quote, struggling to find teachers in hard-to-fill areas, such as technology, family and consumer science, Spanish and special education, unquote. Other school districts in Columbia County are also, quote, experiencing similar struggles. Districts are competing for the same small pool of qualified applicants, unquote. The Hudson District received $50,000 from Novo as part of its participation in the study, which is a program with two main purposes: to, quote, collaborate with educators and school leaders to co-design solutions that will address root causes of decreased teacher morale, unquote, and to, quote, develop an understanding of the experiences and challenges, unquote, that confront classroom educators related to social-emotional dimensions, well-being, and COVID-19 effects. In total, the program includes 12 school districts and charter schools nationwide. Prestipino said the district is in the third of the study's four phases. The third phase consists of, quote, ideating, unquote, solutions and planning to test them. The fourth phase will consist of testing proposed solutions. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
WSKG reports that just about a month before voting begins, the candidates for the new 19th congressional district still have not agreed to debate. Democrat Josh Riley agreed to debate with WSKG, a public television and radio station working with the League of Women Voters of Broome and Tioga counties, but Republican Mark Molinaro did not. Riley said on September 25th, and I quote, "I understood from yesterday that he had declined WSKG debate, which I had accepted, so we'll have to see what other invitations we have," end quote. Molinaro says he has agreed to a debate hosted by Spectrum News and two candidate forums, not debates, one with Ulster County Chamber of Commerce and another with Greater Binghamton Chamber of Commerce. Even though he has agreed to only one debate and two candidate forums, Molinaro said on September 23rd, and I quote, "I'm guessing it's just scheduling issues, but three debates seems like a reasonable number to have across a district this size," end quote. Voting begins on October 29th and ends November 8th, and you can read the full story at the WSKG website.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the town of Rhinebeck's first workforce housing community has received a $6 million grant from Wells Manor Housing Development Fund Corporation. The hamlet at Rhinebeck, an 80-unit community, is a joint venture between Kearney Realty and Development Group and the nonprofit Housing Partnership Development Corporation. Qualifying income for the rental units is up to 90% of the area median income. Wells Manor is a nonprofit senior housing community that was sponsored by the Northern Dutchess Hospital more than 30 years ago as a separate facility. With its nonprofit status, when Wells Manor transferred ownership in 2020, proceeds were placed in escrow to be used for nonprofit workforce housing. Quote, "Workforce housing, as called for in the town of Rhinebeck's master plan, is a crucial need. Housing costs are very high in Rhinebeck, forcing many employees in the town to make lengthy commutes to other towns and counties to find affordable homes for themselves and their families," unquote, said Dan Martin, representative of the Housing Partnership. The project will be located on a 23-acre site next to the town highway department garage near Route 9. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Spencer Conlin reports at Spectrum News that even though Governor Kathy Hochul says New York's new gun law doesn't prohibit historical reenactments with antique guns, event organizers claim the new law is forcing them to cancel their military reenactments. Ed Carpenter, Roger Island Heritage Development Alliance board president, said about an event called off last weekend in Fort Edward, and I quote, "We were expecting up to 1,000 visitors and up to 200 reenactors." Reenactors from eastern states and Canada began to interpret that law, and they decided they weren't going to come to this event, end quote. The Daily Freeman previously reported that a Revolutionary War enactment scheduled for September 3rd in Kingston was also canceled, as organizers cited a portion of the new gun law that defines muzzle-loading flintlock and black powder rifles as, and I quote, rifles, end quote. The law lists several locations where firearms, including rifles and shotguns, are not allowed, including state parks and museums, schools, hospitals, federal, state, and local government property, theaters, stadiums, and houses of worship. Hochul told the New York Post in a statement, and I quote, these laws allow historical reenactments to occur, and there should be no concern otherwise. We will work with legislators and local enforcement to ensure these events can proceed as they have for centuries. In the meantime, individuals who have lawfully participated in reenactments should continue to do so, end quote. Read more about this story at Spectrum News.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that New York lawmakers September 26 applauded the decision to lift Canadian border restrictions by next week, citing the potential economic benefits from the move. A vaccine requirement for cross-border travel will end on October 1st. The border communities that rely on Canada for tourism and commuting could benefit most from the change. Quote, the lifting of burdensome travel requirements at the Canadian border is long overdue and welcome news, particularly for our border communities that have suffered economically for more than 2 years, unquote, Republican Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort said. Travelers will no longer have to show proof of vaccination, COVID test results, or be randomly tested. There had been bipartisan calls for the travel restrictions to ease. In New York, most pandemic-related guidances for mask wearing indoors have ended, though some rules remain in place in particularly sensitive areas. Democratic Assemblymember Billy Jones pointed to a drop in border crossings since the restrictions were put in place. Quote, as the co-chair of the Council of State Governments U.S.-Canada Relations Committee, I've been working with leaders on both sides of the border to lift these restrictions so that we can once again be united with our northern neighbors, unquote, Jones said. Quote, border communities like the North Country have a unique relationship with Canadians, and we've all been feeling the negative ramifications of the partial border closure, unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Amelia Teasdale reports in the Columbia paper that the Kinderhook Town Board wants to again lower the speed limit on State Route 9 in the Columbia County town. Several years ago, it was lowered from 55 miles an hour to 50 miles an hour. On September 12th, the board passed a motion to petition the State Department of Transportation for a further reduction after a recent fatal accident on the highway. On August 13th, a man crossing Route 9 in a golf cart was hit by a southbound SUV near Maple Lane South. The board recalled other nearby accidents on the road, including another fatal crash in 2017. The board also approved spending up to $3,500 on a Street Smart traffic data reporting radar sign. Kinderhook has been borrowing the Village of Valencia sign, which registers, tracks, and shows drivers their speed. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a chance of showers between noon and 4 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 65 degrees. Wednesday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 47 degrees. And on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 60 degrees. And Thursday night, mostly clear with a temperature low of around 41 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Wednesday, September 28th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear from Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson and City of Hudson Housing Director Michelle Tulo about a proposal for affordable housing in the City of Hudson. 10 a.m. it's time for Evan McCormick's new show, Music in Time, on WGXC. And at 11 a.m., Maria Manhattan takes over the airwaves with the Hudson Cafe. 7 p.m., we're live from Brooklyn with the WBAI simulcast of the Off the Hook show and the Hacker Collective 2600, talking all about technology. Then at 8 p.m., Neva Wartell has Music for the Masses, including an interview with Cecilia Villar El Jury during National Hispanic Heritage Month on the radio at 90.7 FM WGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On October 28th, two incredible performers come to the Hudson Valley. Meg Baird and Chris Forsyth are both performing at Tubby's in Kingston. And they're both playing with the same band, Douglas McCombs from Tortoise and 11th Dream Day on bass, Ryan Jewell, who plays with Riley Walker and many others, on drums, and Charlie Soffley from Heron Oblivion on guitar will be backing both Meg Baird from Espers and Chris Forsyth. Performance is October 28th from 8 to 11 p.m. at Tubby's in Kingston. You can find out more about this show and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Hi, this is Miles from Hudson. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. We start each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. Citgo in South Caro has a gallon of gas for $3.54 a gallon. That's the lowest price there. Then the air quality forecast is a 17, down from a 22 on Wednesday, both in the good range. Then we look at the UV index, and it is a 4 in the moderate range on Wednesday. National Weather Service in Albany says it should be mostly sunny with a high of 62 and a northwest wind 3 to 6 miles per hour on Wednesday, spinning local windmills. Wednesday night should also be partly cloudy with a low around 45 and a northwest wind around 6 miles per hour. Thursday, the prediction is for sunny skies with a high of 59 and a north wind around 7 miles per hour for those windmills. Thursday night should be mostly clear with a low around 38. And then the prediction on Friday is for sunny skies with a high of 61 and a low around 42. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Julia Jorn of Round Top, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm Radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Hi, folks. Before we begin taping today, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Peter Jenks of the Federal Communications Commission. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Barris. I don't know if any of you are aware of this, but it's a federal offense to make lascivious remarks on a television network broadcast. The penalty for this disgusting, un-American behavior is 1 year in prison, or a $10,000 fine, or both. Anyone making a sick, submersive remark tonight will be arrested immediately. I then will personally escort the offender to federal prison for booking under Edict Number 364 of the Broadcasting Act of 1963. And it's a long drive to that prison, baby. Just you and me. No witnesses.
Okay, have fun, everybody. All right.
This is 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Floridians are going to experience the impacts from this storm for a very long time.
FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell on Tuesday warned those in the path of Hurricane Ian to heed the warnings of local officials and evacuate. The storm is expected to slow down when it hits the west coast of Florida Wednesday morning, bringing extended periods of damaging winds and rain.
We're talking about impacts in a part of Florida that hasn't seen a major direct impact in nearly 100 years.
Criswell said FEMA has prepared resources and personnel for rescue and recovery efforts. An estimated 2.5 million people are under evacuation orders. The Senate began work on a short-term spending bill to avert a government shutdown. Democrats removed a provision from West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin aimed at streamlining construction of energy projects after Republicans criticized its inclusion. The spending package includes more than $12 billion for emergency aid to Ukraine. Congress faces a September 30th funding deadline.
Both sides want to continue time-sensitive support for Ukraine, but unfortunately, our Democratic colleagues decided to put in extraneous partisan language.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said he would back a bipartisan electoral count reform bill. The support of Republicans like McConnell improves the prospects for the legislation, which aims to prevent overturning the results of a presidential election in Congress. The measure is a direct response to efforts to stop the certification of the 2020 election. Meanwhile, the House committee investigating the January 6 attack on the Capitol announced it will postpone a hearing scheduled for Wednesday due to Hurricane Ian's expected impact on Florida. President Joe Biden said Americans will soon pay less in monthly premiums for the Medicare Part B and no more than $35 for a one-month supply of insulin.
Many of us have been trying to fix this problem, but for years, Big Pharma has stood in the way. Not this year. This year, the American people won and Big Pharma lost.
Biden said lower costs are the result of the Inflation Reduction Act, which Congress passed last month. The rare 3% decrease in monthly premiums will kick in next year, bringing the average to about $165 per month. Students held walkouts across Virginia in protest of Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin's proposed changes to policies regarding transgender students. Youngkin has proposed the state no longer allow students to use facilities marked for their identified gender. Students would also be required to file legal documents in order to be called by their desired pronoun. Finally, a libertarian group has filed the first legal challenge to President Biden's plan to cancel student debt, claiming it would raise state taxes for those who have their debt forgiven. For Public News Service, I'm Catherine Carley. Find our 8 trust indicators on transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 23 states and the District of Columbia allow citizens to register to vote on Election Day, but that doesn't mean that same-day registration is convenient, simple, or that your vote will count in all cases. The National Conference of State Legislatures just released a summary of states with same-day registration, which shows that states that have it have a higher voter participation. It also says that studies have not conclusively shown a partisan advantage from same-day registration. Despite that data, Republican state legislatures have put in more restrictions on same-day registration, erroneously claiming election fraud. These restrictions may include signing an affidavit under penalty of fines or imprisonment that you are eligible to vote. Other states allow same-day registration but require the use of a provisional ballot if the voter's eligibility can't be established on Election Day. Provisional ballots may not count unless the voter returns with proper verification within a specified time. So while students, new residents, or new voters benefit from same-day registration, the tightening of these restrictions makes registering well before Election Day with your local election office a more certain option. And in many states, that pre-registration deadline is 30 days before the election. November 8th is just 40 days away, so time is short. Information on same-day registration states and registration requirements for all 50 states can be found at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. We start each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. Citgo in South Caro has a gallon of gas for $3.54 a gallon. That's the lowest price there. And the air quality forecast is a 17, down from a 22 on Wednesday, both in the good range. Then we look at the UV index, and it is a 4 in the moderate range on Wednesday. National Weather Service in Albany says it should be mostly sunny with a high of 62 and a northwest wind 3 to 6 miles per hour on Wednesday, spinning local windmills. Wednesday night should also be partly cloudy with a low around 45 and a northwest wind around 6 miles per hour. Thursday, the prediction is for sunny skies with a high of 59 and a north wind around 7 miles per hour for those windmills. Thursday night should be mostly clear with a low around 38. And then the prediction on Friday is for sunny skies with a high of 61 and a low around 42. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. We're now joined by Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson and Hudson City of Hudson Housing Director Michelle Tulo, and we're going to talk about affordable housing. Before we have these discussions, we always try to frame what the situation has been over the past 20 years when interest rates have been super low and nobody anywhere has done anything about affordable housing. Now interest rates are super high, and at least Hudson seems to be the only city talking about the situation where there aren't any buildings. There was a recent inventory of Greene County buildings that said there's fewer structures in Greene County than there were 10 years ago. There's also no lack of hotel rooms, which has led more people to rent out their apartments and houses, incentivized people to rent out their apartments and houses as short-term rentals, which those houses and apartments used to be available for people that lived in the area and kept prices down. And it's made one reason there's a shortage of housing, and no cities or towns have built any housing in recent memory, affordable housing in recent memory. There's a little activity in Ulster County, I'll say, but in Greene and Columbia County, I can't think of too much. Is that accurate, or correct me where I'm wrong or what I'm missing? Either of you.
That's 20 years. And I knew coming in that was going to be the biggest issue was dealing with, this housing crisis that we're having in Hudson and across the county. And I knew that we had to look at this from a bunch of different lenses in order to even start to put a dent in it. So one of the things that I'm proud of is that about a year ago, 2 years ago now, we got $1 million anti-displacement grant that allowed us to hire our housing director, Michelle Tulo, and she's really been able to hit the ground running and take a lot of what, you know, I originally stated in my vision, and now it's starting to become, you know, a reality under her leadership.
And Michelle, do you agree with that framework I set out at the beginning?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that it's a lot of towns beyond Hudson are starting to feel this housing issue more acutely, and we're starting to get some more energy momentum on working towards that. Yeah.
So tell us, the big news this week is that there is a proposal that I don't know if it was approved by the Hudson Common Council or it was announced there at least. Where is the situation? It has to go before the planning board. Tell us what the proposal is and what status it is.
Yeah, so this was just a first presentation to the council, but I'll let Michelle kind of give the full synopsis.
Sure. So this proposal is following a year of conversation in the community and completing a housing study that was identifying the type of housing we need and the sites that the city owns that we could use to produce this housing. So we had gone through a process of selecting developers and looking at what the community wanted to see. And so we're super excited to announce a proposal that's by the developers Carney Group and Hudson River Housing, who've done a lot of work in Dutchess County and Ulster. And the proposal is going to do scattered site mixed income housing that's affordable to residents who are ranging from very low income to moderate incomes. So we have three sites in the city. They're all vacant lots. One's on Mill Street, one's on 4th and State, and one's on Rossman. And among those three sites, we're gonna have a total of 85 new units. Most of them are rental, but then two homeownership units. That would be for lower income homeowners for first time home buying.
And these are city owned lots, or are they private?
They're city owned.
And so what is the process? This has to go to the planning board next?
So first, the Common Council would approve the sale of the land, and then they'd go through environmental testing and making sure, you know, all of any mitigation needs to be done, figuring out that, and going through more design process and getting some more community engagement on what the community wants to see in actual designs. And then it'd go into the phases with the planning board and securing grant funding from the states. From the state to finance the development.
So what is the estimated timeline on all that?
So the quickest it could go is if everything, all of that kind of happens at site control and regulatory approvals happens by the spring and the secure financing in the spring, then we're hoping to break ground late 2023. A more like conservative estimate, if that's all done by the fall, then they could break ground early 2024. And hopefully lease up 2024 and fully operational 2024 or 2025 latest.
And the proposal's only been out a couple of days, but have you gotten opposition yet? Often affordable housing is opposed by the not in my backyard kind of people, or that's
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't gotten any like substantial pushback. I think that the fact that this is scattered site, it's not just everyone in one building kind of built up into towers. And the fact that I think the public is really seeing the crisis and the impacts of the crisis for what it is. If we look at the hospital, they can't find nurses or doctors because they can't afford to live here. Our school district is seeing young teachers leave to go work in places where, you know, there's housing available. So I think now the impacts of lack of housing are starting to be more shown to a broader population than they have been in the past.
Everybody in Hudson probably knows somebody that's had to move out or move farther away by now.
Yep. Yeah, so we haven't had any substantial pushback. I think people are really like taking their time to really look at this project, which is good. And this is a total city project. The last project that we talked about was Depot District and was with the Galvin Foundation, who, you know, they don't always have the best reputation with certain people. So this is just, you know, us on our own building this one. So
yeah, what is the name of the group again? Because I'm not sure we've been pronouncing it correctly this week.
Carney and Hudson. Yes.
I think
and
we've
Hudson
been saying,
Housing.
I think we've been saying Kearney. It's Carney Group.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were saying that at first too.
Yeah. And Hudson River Housing.
Often like sort of, tangential issues are used to block projects like this, like parking, for instance. Are you prepared for the inevitable where's the parking question?
Yes. So two of the sites have parking for the residents included into it. One of the sites has parking for most of the units. The ratio is a little below the unit size, but we don't anticipate that being an issue. Because we know that number one, that ratio of parking units to actual units actually matches like our rate of vehicle and to household, like owner number of vehicles per household. We know not all households have vehicles. And then also there is ample space in that neighborhood. So I think that will be fine. The sites mostly have their own parking.
Yeah, agree. And when we looked at this project, we started planning for it. We kind of looked at all the comments and feedback from previous projects as well, and wanted to kind of sort them all out before we announced this project. And parking, of course, was one of them.
is there, there's long been talk about adding some parking. You can't really do it on Warren Street, where the only parking problem really is, but off of, I guess, Union or Columbia. Is that going forward? Is there any movement on that?
We had a big meeting last night with all of our city stakeholders and department heads about parking. We have a commissioned parking study, so we are looking into a lot of different options as far as parking goes, and that could be you know, anything from more spaces, creating more spaces in the municipal lots, to getting rid of alternate side parking. So like everything right now is up for discussion that's going to help us create more parking.
And you've got, you know, this these three projects together as one project aren't going to be enough, but you've got some other proposals and ideas to help this problem, right?
Yes. So production of new housing is a super important part of the puzzle, but we also look at other aspects that contribute to the lack of affordability. So for example, the preservation of our existing housing. So we know our housing stock is so old, and so it has a lot of issues that contribute to, you know, health issues from asbestos and lead and mold, but also make a lot of housing uninhabitable because of roof damage or code violations. And so one thing we're doing is we won a CDBG grant from the state of $500,000 to help homeowners, low and moderate income homeowners, do critical repairs so they can stay housed and they don't have to sell or leave. And we've been kind of gathering other ways we can leverage other funds and money to help stretch that even farther to help more households, and looking at weatherization to bring down some costs of utilities and heating. So that's one piece of it. Another thing we've done is looking at, because a lot of people's rents are so high, they're spending, you know, more than 30% in income on rent, but sometimes more than 50%. And so that means that when anything comes up, you know, they don't have a lot of money saved. It's very precarious. So we have a pool of, it's called Hudson Roots, and it's basically emergency rental assistance so that when that event comes, we've had people who were out of work for, you know, an injury or just their job closed for the summer or whatever it was, we're able to help them with like that 1 month assistance or the first month's rent. And just that little like gap support has been really helpful for some of our residents to stay housed. So those are some big things we're looking at. We're also looking longer term at, are there ways of making our zoning code a little more flexible to allow for some, a little bit more housing, like gentle density, kind of fitting in some more housing units or larger household sizes and our existing land. So those are some of the key things we're looking at in addition to this increase, in addition to these new developments.
And I guess this week the Hudson Industrial Development Agency, which has been criticized, all the IDAs are often criticized for giving tax breaks to rich corporations and rich developers, but has been criticized in particular for giving a tax break to a high-end hotel, which more hotel rooms might solve this problem a little tiny bit. You guys, I don't know if you voted, I think, right, to change the criteria for getting a tax break. Well, Kamal, you're on the IDA, right? So you can speak to this.
Yes. So we voted and it was passed unanimously. So basically, the application is now centered around a community benefit agreement. So when we're scoring different projects that come through, we're looking at, you know, what kind of employment is it going to be bringing into the area? Because a lot of times we get application and they just say, you know, we're bringing 25 jobs or, you know, whatever. And then we're looking at exactly what those jobs are going to do for the community. What are they going to be at? You know, what is the impact of this project and how is it going to better the community that it's in? So you really have to fit the criteria in order to get funding. And we're making sure that the community really gets its bang for, you know, the buck that we're given. So we're hoping that any future projects that come through they're really going to have like full community benefits.
It's like a scoring system, right? And one of the score points you can get is if you're providing workforce housing, right?
Correct. Yeah. You have to, projects are really going to have to be creative, and they're going to have to look at the community as a whole and as a place that they just don't want to come in and make money, but a community that they want to come in and be a part of and help people out.
Are you concerned that even if you get all these things done and the whole region still has this housing crisis and it's still going to affect Hudson?
Yeah. Yeah, we understand that, you know, we cannot house every single person in Hudson. We just don't have the space. We've been meeting with the county. The county is actually in talks right now. They just approved to hire their own version of Michelle. So Michelle is going to be working directly with that person, as well as a full housing task force that's going to be countywide to address this issue. So we're hoping that some of the resources that don't apply to us as just a city that we feel like we're missing out on because we're not applying as a county, we'll be able to take advantage of those resources going forward. And Michelle, you want to add on anything there?
No, I think you summed it up. Yeah, I think definitely some pieces of looking at this stuff very holistically in terms of rehabbing, you know, some units that are in disrepair. It's easier to do at a larger scale. So some of the small towns might not have the money to hire consultants or to do their own studies. So if we're looking at it as like a larger region, that really helps us to take on more policy, but then also to take on more projects. For like a developer to do like one or two units, it's not very cost effective. And we know that like large multi-unit housing is not gonna fit in a lot of the county, but if you're to do scattered site housing that fits in with the character of other towns, it's more cost effective for developers. So we're really excited that a lot of our neighboring towns are really excited to like work with us and with the county about how we can address this together.
Are economic forces working in your favor? I've seen some reports about housing prices have come down a little bit, but I'm wondering if it's true in Hudson, and I'm wondering if people, say, from New York City and elsewhere are still moving to Hudson in great numbers in the way they were during the pandemic.
From what I've seen, I think those decrease in housing prices is going to help some more of the, like that $200,000 to $300,000 range. That was that 350 or 400, that is going to come down a little bit, but then you also have to look at the increased cost of interest on mortgages, that's going to make it harder for people. In Hudson, I think we're a little stuck in that we've become this luxury real estate market and that people from wealthier areas are still very interested in it. So we haven't seen any relief in our housing market yet.
Yeah, just this week, Bon Appetit and New York Times wrote about a restaurant in Hudson as one of the 10 best in the country or something, and you keep getting stories like that which you can crow about in some ways but are making this problem worse in other ways.
Yeah, it's bittersweet. I mean, we're proud of an area business, especially a small local business, you know, getting national recognition, but at the same time, since it is so scary, housing is so scary, anything new and exciting happening in Hudson is often met with, you know, that kind of divide where people are feeling like the more and more Hudson gets popular, the more and more people are going to flock to Hudson, and the cost of living and housing is going to continue to rise. You know, our job is to do our best to take advantage of the popularity and at the same time create spaces and room for people that want to live here and be rooted here and raise their families here.
And then what can people do, citizens, if they want to comment on this, if they want more affordable housing in Hudson, or if they're against the proposals, what can they do? Both of you.
Yeah, I'll start, I guess, and I'll say, you know, they can attend any of the meetings that we're having. We're going to be meeting with the residents down on Mill Street. soon because their neighborhood is going to be changing if these projects, you know, come to fruition. And, you know, they can also reach out to myself or Michelle. You know, we're answering calls all the time about housing. They can reach out to their councilman or attend the council meetings. We're going to be doing a number of, you know, presentations and getting the community involved in how the projects will look. And, you know, it's going to be definitely a lot of community momentum that we're going to be tapping into. And also these, I have to also admit that these are going to be some of the best eco-friendly housing around as well.
Oh, we didn't mention that there's solar panels on the roof and they're geothermal too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, LED certified and renewable energy. I would agree. Like we are happy to answer questions. We posted a lot of information online on our website on housing, but we're also free to answer questions. Council members have they've been very thoughtful and have asked great questions, and they're very informed, so people can talk to our council members, whether people are in support or, you know, have critiques, but also and ask people to be curious. I think find a lot of times when I find people who have opposition, once we talk more and I understand their concerns, we're able to kind of give some more information that help people understand that maybe their concerns weren't necessarily founded. We have a lot of exciting opportunities for people to benefit from this in terms of bringing some new commercial spaces in, some new amenities like green spaces, and also bringing in revenue into our city. So we're excited.
All right. Anything else you want to add about all this that we haven't brought up?
Did we touch on the housing trust fund?
I was just going to say that's on my notes, and I don't think we did. Yeah.
I'll let you lead the way.
So we created a housing trust fund this year for Hudson, which we're very excited about. So a lot of times with housing, we were reliant on receiving grants, which are wonderful, but they come with a lot of restrictions or can be kind of costly or unwieldy to apply for. So a housing trust fund is this separate account of money the city has put aside that is, it's governed by an advisory committee, and it's able to be used for creative ways to help housing. And so it could be used for housing rehabilitation projects, could be used for land acquisition, it could be used for home ownership assistance, rental assistance, studies, plans. So we're just getting started. We've been doing community engagement for the past year. We've heard from close to 300 residents direct events or online to hear what they want to see the money used for. And we're really excited that we're going to have some flexibility to pursue projects and policies that are going to be able to help our residents and aren't reliant on necessarily external sources of funding.
Well, hopefully some local officials in Catskill and Kinderhook and Copaic and Saugerties and Greenville, and we can go on and on with the cities that aren't talking about this, are listening, because nobody else seems to be talking about affordable housing at all.
Yeah. And, you know, we, the bigger of a coalition we can put together, especially of folks in our region, the more we can, you know, get from out of the state. And that's why, you know, we're looking at this from so many different lenses, because we know that actual groundbreaking of housing takes time. So we wanted to have a bunch of initiatives to go hand in hand with the actual projects as well.
All right. One final question for the mayor. You made news this week with a story in the Register Star about you running for a third term and then also running for assembly during that third term. I think I saw on social media that you weren't quite happy with that coverage. You want to clear the air on that story?
So the Register Star, you know, reached out to me and they said that there was a bunch of rumors swirling around that I was running for assembly. So, you know, they called up and asked the question. I said, my goal right now is to secure, you know, my third term as mayor and to really make sure that everything that we've been planning and ironing out gets done. But at the same time, I wouldn't rule out a run for assembly. But right now, my main focus is making sure that the goals that I set out to accomplish get accomplished. That's the main mission. I think that, you know, I've learned from a lot of the previous higher elected officials, and I want to make sure that wherever I go, as far as if I stay into politics, I'm able to still help out the community that I started in.
Do you have a good relationship with Dede Barrett? Because that was the assembly seat that you theoretically would be trying for. And I believe there was protests outside of her Hudson office on the housing issue about a year or two ago.
Yeah. I think we definitely have differing opinions when it comes to housing. I think she's coming around a little more that it's like become an issue that's main stage. But, you know, I don't have an issue with her as our current assembly person. I just think that I have a different kind of approach to the work. And as far as like a lot of people don't really know what our assembly people do. There's not always the access to them like it is when you have other local elected officials. And, you know, I really want to change that and modernize how, you know, our assembly people act and react to our community. And also I've been on the ground for so long now. That I understand the help that's needed for local leaders when it comes to issues like housing or employment or taxes or other things like that, that, you know, the state really can play a key role on.
All right. Michelle Tulo and Mayor Kamal Johnson from Hudson. Anything else you guys want to mention?
No, I just want to thank you guys for having us. You know, we'll definitely be back whenever you need to hear more about the status of projects. We want to make sure this conversation continues on, and you know, your viewers and anybody else who wants to partner or know more about what we're doing, you know, please get in contact with us. And Michelle, I'll give you a chance. Your goodbye.
Yes, thank you for, you know, asking great questions. We're happy to answer anyone's questions or listen to people's thoughts on housing. So my email is housing@cityofhudson.org, and then you can find our contact info on our city website as well. But yeah, we're excited about all the things we're working on. We're feeling a lot of momentum. It feels good.
Well, great. I'm sure we'll be talking with hopefully both of you in the months ahead as this project goes through all the processes in the Common Council and the Planning Board and such.
Definitely.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank
you. Thanks a lot.